Today on Movie Wild is our second update from the Los Angeles Film Festival 2014. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. So, greetings all.
Greetings. Day two. We are in full swing at the Los Angeles Film Festival. I believe this might have been the day where there were more films screened than any other day during the film festival. Maybe between today and tomorrow.
It's kind of a strange schedule this year. We've been talking about that. Normally, non-stop. The LA Film Festival runs over two weekends. This year, they've changed it up a little bit, which is harder for us to cover because we're based in San Diego. So, little frustrating for us in that we can't get more of the festival in.
Yes.
But, scheduling-wise, today was, I guess, the peak day.
Yeah.
And it was well-attended today. I think just about every screening I went to was pretty full.
Yeah.
Yeah, and usually, you know, we run, as do most people at film festivals, we run from screening to screening, barely having time to grab a bite to eat or not. And I guess this is as good a time as any to a shout out to our dear, dear taco truck from Slauson and Company. It might be the world's best taco truck.
And we were almost alarmed because we didn't see it when we arrived, but then it came.
Yes, right across from the LA Live cinemas, across the street in the parking lot, there is a taco truck. And they honestly, I mean, we live in Southern California. We've had tacos every which way. And this place, though, really, I mean, last couple of years we've been having it. And this year, it was like coming back home. Amazing tacos.
You know, I haven't spent a lot of time in Mexico, but these seem as authentically Mexican as you can get.
Yeah.
Although there are a couple of them I'm not. I wasn't brave enough to try. They had the tripe.
They had the tripe. They had the lingua, which is with the tongue.
And they also had the beef head.
They had the beef head.
Beef head?
Cerveza. What was it?
Yeah.
I'm not even going there.
Well, it's a funny thing for me, right? You've got beef.
Well, beef head's not feet, Joe. So beef head is, I think, exactly what the description says.
Cow head.
Yes, it's a cow head.
Is that like brains or is that...
No,
like,
it's the muscular part of the head. It's face.
Well, in fancy restaurants, they call it beef cheeks.
It's a face charcoal.
Well, no, it's not cheeks.
Remember the thing about beef cheeks?
Which are delicious.
I know, but why do they call it beef head? It just scares me.
Because it's more than the cheeks.
What, is it the nose?
I'm telling you, it's the face.
It's everything.
Yes. Cow
it's
face.
Everything neck up.
It's a face taco.
Cow face taco.
Anyway, we're here to talk about movies.
Okay.
Yes. And the taco truck. And we just so that everyone knows, our friend Angel is here as we're recording this podcast. So we're definitely going to get a comment from Angel because this is her first film festival. And we've been advocating people go to these things. So, well, hopefully we get a couple of words from Angel towards the end of the podcast. But without further ado, we covered three movies today officially. Walking Underwater, Meet the Patels, and Uncertain Terms. So you want to kick off with Walking Underwater?
Yeah, Walking Underwater is a documentary filmed by a Polish director, and it essentially has a look at the people who live off the islands of Borneo, specifically the Bojua tribe. And the movie focuses on two individuals, a man who's an expert diver and who dives for fish using what's called compression breathing, and his nephew, young teenage nephew who he's trying to coach regarding the ways of life, regarding the ancient ways, the indigenous ways from the tribe in terms of fishing. And the movie very calmly kind of watches these two individuals interact, and it almost becomes at one point a mythic man and child versus the rest of the world kind of story, and I think at its very core, it's a story about, you know, indigenous traditions versus modernity and approaching change and the inevitableness of change. I thought this documentary was just exceptional at multiple levels. But I'm curious to hear what you guys thought about it.
Oh, I really liked it. Yes, you said a lot of what I was thinking anyway. Beautiful cinematography, lovely relationship movie between young and old, someone imparting their knowledge about how to do things without modern day technology for me. I mean, these people don't have scuba gear. They don't have wetsuits. They don't have, you know, breathing apparatus, but they make it work. And I was just blown away.
I mean, their flippers are made out of pieces of wood and attached to flip-flops, the best I can tell. Those are their flippers, and they dive deep into the water, deep into the water.
Holding a rubber hose in their mouth.
Yeah, running from a compressor, which I don't know if anyone's used a compressor here, but these things force out air nonstop under pressure, and they're not designed for diving, mm-hmm. right? These are things that you use to inflate your tires in your car. So compressor diving is quite dangerous, and they allude to that in the movie mm-hmm. a couple of places. But I mean, what these guys do is nothing short of remarkable. But you know, just my comments on the movie real quick. I mean, I like you guys, I thought it was beautifully shot. But something strange happened to me about a third of the way into the movie.
Which is?
I started to, well, knowing full well that this was entered into the documentary competition for the film festival, I forgot that I was watching a documentary, because there is a very subtle narrative woven into mm-hmm. the story here. And at some point, I kind of disengaged with the fact that I was watching documentary footage, you know, because unlike a lot of documentaries, there's no voiceover, there's no, you know, sense of place or message that they're trying to get across. They're just putting you in the place of these people and the world in which they live. But there was a little narrative going on between this man and boy about their world. It moved into, you know, juxtaposing, you know, the absurdities of modern scuba diving from the West coming into Borneo, and it just did a whole bunch of different things that kind of, I really thought I was watching actors and a traditional screenplay. It was just a fascinating movie to watch from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, as I was watching it, I was thinking, you know, this is part political. You know, I think a political soapbox. I think this is part mystical. This is part documentary. This is part, you know, romance on some level between mm-hmm. the uncle and his son, and between, you know, them and the water and the life that they have. And I just kept thinking, my God, you know, this is almost, there was some mysticalness about it as well. And I kind of thought, you know, these are like the original mermaids or mermen. The way, the skills, the diving skills that these people had was just unbelievable to me, and their connection with the water and the spirituality they have around the place they live was just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I think there's something very elemental about the movie. There's something very basic about the movie, and I think it's hard to do this kind of thing, especially when you're looking at or putting your focus on the Bajau people in this case, you know, a group of people who the world doesn't know about. And it's so difficult to do this without pandering or without patronizing or without, you know, there's a complete lack of any subjectivity. I mean, it's very objectively done. And, you know, we're talking about what the movie's about, but I think the other thing that I really found exceptional about it was visually, it's just breathtaking. I mean, some of the scenes in this movie are just like jaw-droppingly beautiful, like achingly beautiful to look at. Yeah. So, I mean, it just works at multiple levels. I hope that this movie gets a wider audience because it deserves it.
I mean, there was one scene and they show a giant turtle swimming and the man swimming next to mm-hmm. him, and they're almost swimming in sync. I had tears in my eyes, that yeah. one scene.
And what was more remarkable to me more than anything was that the filmmaker came on at the end of the presentation of the film and alluded to the fact that they shot all of this in three and a half days mm-hmm. in the ocean. That's mind-blowing to me. I mean, this is the world in which these people live. We took a quick peek in and we saw all this beauty. I can only imagine what could have happened if they'd been on location for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Just stunning work.
Yeah, if you want a beautiful, meditative, immersive experience, I don't think you'd find a better film. People should seek it out.
And a nice message. So apparently they are trying to actually raise some money, because apparently the Bajau people are nomads and they don't actually belong to any of the countries that are around them. And so they have no access to schools or things that most of us have access to. And so there is actually a charity called www.indiegogo.com. And there's a whole campaign called Sari Goes to School. And this filmmaker actually wants to go and make a school in Bajau. So again, a film for a good cause as well.
So maybe you can post that on the website for us, and that way we can link over directly to the cause. So moving on to our second movie, Uncertain Terms. So I'll quickly intro this one. This is essentially about a character called Robbie. He has some relationship troubles. He's needing to escape from the city in which he lives, and so he moves to Hudson Valley and stays with his aunt, who runs a home for pregnant teens. As the only man in the house, Robbie captures the attention of many of the girls, and when he strikes up a friendship with Nina, who is dealing with her own relationship troubles, tensions run high in the house. This movie comes from director Nathan Silver, and it stars a number of debut performances by David Delbomme, India Menuez, and a whole bunch of people who I'll post on the website in terms of a cast and crew. So, guys, what did you think of Uncertain Terms?
It's an odd thing to say, but this movie reminded me of one of my favorite films from a couple of years ago, which was Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. And I don't know if either of you saw that.
I did.
Rashmi's seen it. I kept missing that one.
It's the film which introduced the world to Elizabeth Olsen, but it has that same sense of... it's very tightly wound. It has a sense of menace about it. I mean, any number of scenes in the movie always give you the feeling that at any minute somebody's going to do something really bad and something really violent and something really nasty, and that sense of dread and menace. And it particularly reminds me of this movie because it's the sense of menace set within a very pastoral, green, back to nature kind of environment. And the tension between something so organic and something possibly evil, you know, works very well. I actually like the movie. I
love the way Yazdi talks about film, by the way. He can be so poetic at times.
No, it's just it's
lovely.
I grew to like the movie more and more as it was proceeding, and then it really came through very nicely, I think, towards the end.
Yeah, I think it started with a bang. It's a very interesting idea, so I like that. Mm-hmm. It's quite original, and I like that it's got this sense of foreboding. Mm-hmm. You always felt like you were walking on eggshells. Mm-hmm. Everyone was walking around on eggshells. What I loved the most, though, was the central character called Carla, who was the den mother, the lady who actually sets up this school for, you know, unmarried pregnant teens. She was just a great character, and I think actually set on the filmmaker's own mother. And part of her story,
played by the
filmmaker's mother. I loved the character. I loved how juxtaposed she was as a character to everything else that was going on in the movie. And I also liked that each one of the girls was a fully fleshed, realized character. And I wanted to almost see a film about each one of those characters. I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, I mean, this one started off a little slow for me, and I have to admit, for the first 10 minutes or so, I wondered if I'd made a mistake by selecting the film. But once it kind of picked up pace and I kind of understood where it was going and what it was about, it really grabbed my attention. And like you say, Yazdi, that the sense of danger, this was a kind of a tinderbox, this whole situation. Mm-hmm. You have a guy with relationship troubles and a bunch of young, impressionable teenage girls with relationship problems. All, you know, it's kind of almost like the, what's the Winona Ryder movie where she's in the mental asylum? Like
Girl Interrupted. It felt like that to me as well.
Everyone's got these motives to behave badly. And so that level of tension throughout the movie was brilliant. I think the premise itself, like you mentioned, Rashmi, wonderfully original and absolutely, absolutely effective. I mean,
yeah, and it's very well realized. I mean, exactly. It's a novel premise, right? It's the rooster in the hen house. You know, it's as simple as that. And it's
the fox in the hen house.
The fox in the hen house. Actually, even worse, the fox in the hen house. But you know, it's not played for cheap laughs, and it's not played for, you know, TV kind of drama either.
Right.
I mean, all the conflict is very, very based on the characters of, you know, those four girls and the guy. You know, all the tensions which are built, the jealousies, the double crosses, and so forth. And No, I think, and it's exceptionally well written as well.
I mean, the dialogue is partly improvised. They alluded to that in the Q&A session afterwards. And I think all the actors did a really great job of depicting teenage girls. I mean, these were teenage girls that were in a situation where they had to do a lot of growing up very quickly. They'd gotten themselves pregnant. Well, they weren't. That's a horrible statement. They had become pregnant through circumstance. They didn't get themselves pregnant. It was two people. But they were still very young girls in this situation, and they acted and behaved and spoke like young girls. And there were some wonderful moments that weren't necessarily related to the main narrative, where you kind of got their backstories just by girls sitting around talking like girls. I thought that was just wonderfully done. My only real knock against the movie is that in the final act, where it tries to bring everything together, it does it very, very quickly. I mean, for a movie that's such a slow boil, it boils over and then everything hits you. And the movie ends. And so that felt a little rushed, almost a little pulpy to me, but that's a minor nitpick on a movie that I think was otherwise very effective.
Yeah, what struck me the most, sorry, Yasir, I know you were going to just jump in. What struck me the most is when I compare the love element in this movie compared to what we saw yesterday in Comet. This one felt very realistic and organic compared to Comet. And yesterday we complained about the fact that no one speaks like that in real life. Here, this was the complete opposite, Joe. You got it exactly right. This actually felt like we were a fly on the wall. Yeah. And I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that a lot of the film was improvised, as we heard, you know, during the Q&A.
But that can go either way. And this improvisation, I think, was done really well.
Yeah.
Again, like, it kind of felt as well, those more intimate moments were somewhat like last year's Short Term 12 in part. You had this institution
sense.
Setting and the way that the characters relate in, you know, they're all broken in some way, right? So, it was slightly reminiscent of that, if not quite as accomplished.
Yes, Dee.
No, I mean, when you were making an earlier comment about the last act of the movie, I mean, that's another reason why this movie reminds me so much of Martha Marcy May Marlene, which, you know, amongst the films in recent times has the ending which has been discussed the most. That ending too comes very suddenly, very in a very, very unexpectedly, and it literally ends on a dime. I mean, it ends almost like mid-scene.
Oh, wow.
And this one ties things up a little bit, but it does happen quickly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
all right.
Definitely a good movie. I worry for a movie like this, which is high quality, well made, entertaining, unique, and will probably never find distribution.
I hope it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is kind of a hard sell. I think the subject matter is going to be uncomfortable to many.
And a great performance. We haven't talked about the main guy. Great performance. It was very understated, but it really worked well for me. This character just was
Robbie,
the right, the Robbie character was just the right temperature.
He looked like an older Justin
he
Timberlake
did.
To me.
Yeah.
Oh, you see, I got Keanu Reeves.
Oh, okay. yeah, I can see that as well.
Really good film.
And one of the girls who is the lead actor in the film, what an unusual, you know, face she has, and what an unusual screen presence. I mean, she was almost without any kind of makeup, and yet,
Are you talking about the redhead?
I'm talking about the redhead. I mean, she has this pre-Raphaelite, we were talking about
Botticelli
it, like
chick.
A Botticelli kind of face. And it's a face reminded me of Shelley Duvall. I mean, it's a face you don't see very often in cinemas. So,
and the camera loved her.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I got big vibes of Julianne Moore. Yes, oh, okay. I really...
Maybe a very young Julianne Moore. Yeah, I can see that. Yep, good film.
Good film. Okay. All right, move on to movie number three, which was Meet the Patels. So, Rashmi.
Yeah, so Meet the Patels is written and directed by brother and sister team Geeta Patel and Ravi Patel. And basically, it's a really interesting documentary about the Patels and Ravi, who's had some trouble in his dating life, and his parents want him to get married, as all Indian parents or ethnic parents want their kids to do, and give them grandchildren. And this is basically a journey that he sets out on to, I guess, challenge them to find for their help to find him a bride, and him and his sister document this. So Joe, why don't you tell us what you thought about this movie?
I mean, I enjoyed this movie an awful lot. This was, it had a warmth to it. This guy was obviously telling a very personal story about his difficulties with relationships and how his family and his culture were kind of interfering with that. There were lots and lots of issues mixed in here. I mean, there's the whole immigration side of things, ethnic issues. There were relationship issues, what it's like to be, you know, young and single today, finding a partner. There were cultural things. There were lots and lots of themes thrown in here, which could actually have made this movie kind of a messy thing. But instead, what you get above all else was just this overwhelming sense of family that this man came from. He, you know, he did have some particular issues, but it was all done with a very respectful look at his culture, his parents, his family, and his own personal problems. I mean, no one looked bad in this movie, and I think they were very careful to do that. But this was just an absolute riot to watch, and I enjoyed it.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this movie was a delight as well. I mean, you know, a documentary about an Indian guy trying to find a woman he's going to get married in America should not make for, you know, must-watch documentary, but it's absolutely 100% must-watch. And I think there are a lot of things which are working in its favor. One is, you know, I think most people think that their family is unique, but I think this brother-sister team really probably figured out that their family is really quite, I mean, talk about, somebody should make, like, you know, an E-channel reality show about his parents.
They're the Indian Cosbys.
They're like, I mean, it's, I mean, just, I mean, I could watch his parents forever. And I think they realized that and had the good sense to make a movie about it. And also, I think the movie has a very good heart. It has a good sense of,
yes,
you know, it doesn't want to point fingers. It doesn't want to say my mom is mean or my dad forced me to do this. And it recognizes that everybody means well, and it just comes from a good place. And when we watched it, it played like gangbusters. I mean, the audience was really responding to it. They were laughing through the whole thing. So I think it's a success.
Yeah, and two of the biggest laughers, I think, were you and me, Yazdi, who were sitting next to each other, because yeah, Isn't this just like our lives?
Totally.
I mean, this was like spending a week with my family in a good way. I loved this movie. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. I can't say enough good things about this. Thank you for making this movie. This is like a narrative of most of the people who have ethnic backgrounds. We've talked about this before. You know, anyone who has an ethnic background where they live a double life, and when that front door opens and it shuts, it's like going into Alice in Wonderland. This is the movie about your lives. And, you know, again, I think the stars of this movie were clearly the parents who have words of wisdom. So I think it's a wonderful way of bringing culture and ethnicity and religion and generations and wisdom and, you know, again, imparting knowledge. I think it brings all of those things together in a witty, clever way. I love the fact that this was done documentary style with some animation, some home video, some narrative on top, great graphics, brilliant. I could go on all night.
One of my favorite aspects of the movie was just how he portrayed his own conflict, because I think that sense of being an American but also being an Indian were real conflicts in terms of the way that he went about everything in his life. I mean, you know, his relationships, his friendships, what he expected out of life, what he expected out of marriage. These things are very difficult, I think, to be as honest as he was about them in a movie setting. I mean, I applaud him, if nothing else, for putting his life out there for everyone to kind of to see. And I think he did that very well, but he did it respectfully. I mean, he didn't hate his culture and his background for the way that they made him feel. I think he's looking at it as, looking at it from a very adult perspective, you know, that there is a richness and a beauty to the culture from which he comes that he wants to have. And yet he finds himself, you know, as an American, not necessarily compatible with a lot of those ideals. So, you know, that was just one of my favorite aspects of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, all three of us are immigrants, aren't we? I mean, in the U.S. at least. And I think anybody, it doesn't even matter. You don't have to be Indian. I think if you're any kind of a person who's first or second generation, or even zero generation, who's just moved to a new country and where your family is trying to adapt to a whole new culture, I think it'll work. And again, this movie is not looking at cheap. It never makes any cheap shots, and you know, I give, you know, the movie's kind of rough around the edges, and they've clearly you know, bypassed a few cardinal rules of how to make a documentary, but it really has a good heart, and I absolutely commend them, and it's authentic.
Yeah, I really hope this one gets picked up, because I think it's entertaining enough to do well in the mainstream. I think word of mouth on something like this will really carry it far. So I just hope it gets out there. And they mentioned a PBS deal next year, which I think is terrific. But I'd like people to see it in the cinema environment. I think there's so much more to be gained from a movie in that environment. So I hope this one gets out there.
Brilliant.
All right. And before we go today, I know, Angel, you're kind of fading here, but our friend Angel has joined us at this year's LA Film Festival. So we're just delighted to have her here with us. It's great to hang out with friends as well as, you know, hanging out with each other at the LA Film Festival. So, Angel, we've been on the show. At every opportunity that we get, we tell people, you need to go to film festivals. Now, we say that because we're complete film geeks. You know, that's just kind of who we are. But, I mean, as a non-film geek, how was your experience today?
It's been really enriching. One of the most meaningful parts for me was being able to, you know, hear the director and their story about the process of making the film and, you know, what inspired them to make it. And it just contextualized it and gave it a different dimension for me and helped the non-movie geek in me to have a deeper appreciation for the film.
Yeah, I mean, I always love the director Q&As. And it's funny because I can watch a movie and not be too hot about it, and then the director Q&A just throws in so much more about what the movie was about and where it came from and their motivations behind getting it made. So yeah, great point on that.
Without a doubt, that's my favorite part of film festivals, is just the discussion with the filmmaker, the actors, other cast and crew after the end of the movie. But it's not about me. What else?
Well, I think I broke a personal record for someone who watches, on a good year, maybe 2 films a year. I've watched 3 in one day today.
4, right?
Kind of. Yeah. You can talk about that 4th one. and I am staying up past pumpkin time. And the other thing I'm looking forward to is partaking in the movie walla tradition of breakfast at the farm tomorrow morning. And trying out this taco truck I've been hearing about.
It's all about the food.
I say, did we talk about the taco truck yesterday?
No, we did not. Just today.
So can I just, Angel, what's the most surprising thing for you?
How a lot of these movies, they're so organic. You know, this was in contrast to some of the things I see on the big screen. I mean, this is, it's just people who are out there making film. And I really like how they sort of embedded with the people who are participating in the film.
I mean, the thing about film festivals for me is they are, a lot of them are just passion projects. And passion projects differ from the studio system. And so much of what we see in, you know, your local AMC is, you know, it's for profit motive, right? Somebody's assembled a team to make a movie. It's quite mechanically done in terms of, you know, these movies have similar templates and beats and things that focus groups say will do well. Whereas a lot of what you see at a film festival is passion project. Somebody writes a script and has a drive within them to get the film made, or somebody discovers a topic that they feel needs to be shared with the world, and so they find the money and go out and make a documentary about it. So that feel of organicness, I think, is absolutely a terrific point. I mean, that's It's why we love coming to these things.
Yeah.
Will you come again? Will you?
Absolutely. And I have to thank the movie Wallace for encouraging me to come to my first one.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a great experience.
All right, well, let's wrap up the podcast for today. We'll try and do one more update from the LA Film Festival. We have still one day left of coverage that we can do here in town. If you are listening to this in time, it's the weekend of June 13th, 14th. Do try and get out here. I mean, you know, LA Film Festival, for anyone in Southern California, is very accessible. Parking is cheap, and the festival is, for the most part, well organized. So, do check it out. And if you don't make it this year, definitely come next year. It's just a real treat to attend. So until our next podcast, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. Good night from me.
And me.
Me as well.